Just before 2:15, lovely to have Dr. Darren Green with us in studio for Health and Wellness. Welcome back, Darren.
Thank you so much.
So we are going to be talking about sports injuries and looking at a couple of things, AstroTurf being one of the big factors that play in here, but also just the sheer competitiveness of sport, even at school level.
Absolutely.
And the length of seasons and. There's a lot to that conversation. Before we get there, though, the Skullbreaker Challenge. Darren, I mean, I've seen the video. I'm sure lots of our listeners have seen the video. For the sake of those who are going, what is the Skullbreaker Challenge?
Yes.
And what is TikTok? Just tell us what you saw in that video.
Yeah, so in the video, you have depicted a challenge that goes out to students or scholars, rather. So TikTok is a social media platform primarily used by ages 7 to 22, very young.
Yeah.
Long or the short is they often throw out a challenge in video form, whether it's a dancing challenge or a singing challenge. And in this case, what we call the Skullbreaker Challenge is exactly that. It's where two people stand, or two kids stand adjacent to someone in the middle, and basically as he jumps up into the air, they trip him by taking his feet out underneath him with their feet basically.
Yeah.
And then the person that's taking the challenge falls backwards straight onto it, and it has to be a hard surface. The challenge is on tar cement. So that's the funny part about this. I mean, it's like obviously putting yourself at risk to smash the back of
your
occipital skull,
yeah,
against a hard surface. And we all know, it's not just in the movies, falling downstairs, if you bump the back of your head, that you predispose yourself to skull-based fractures and intracranial hemorrhages. So whiplash injuries, neck fractures, spinal injuries, and of course then head injuries and intracranial hemorrhage or bleeds. Those are the risks.
The risks.
It's like a
menu
you're choosing from before taking the challenge.
It's I mean, it's crazy. And you know, I mean, I said to you last night when we were chatting about this, Darren, I know at some level internally my body is going, yeah, you did stupid things too when you were young.
Of course we did, yes.
But I don't recall doing something life-threateningly stupid, apart from, one could argue, eating the Borevoors rolls outside the doors at 3 o'clock in the morning was life-threatening, but let's not go there. The video is a local one. There has been a death recorded in Brazil linked
Correct.
To this challenge already. There have been reports of serious injuries all over the world. I think it's Otsa in the local
that posted
video,
the video, yeah,
that's being shared, but it suggests that it's happening in other parts of South Africa as well. So something to be mindful of, maybe to have a conversation with your kids if you know they're on TikTok, or even if they're not, to have the conversation to check that perhaps they're not
Absolutely.
Using it without your knowing, to warn them that this is potentially life-changing, if not fatal. Darren, I mean, head injuries, spinal injuries, you run the risk of paralysis. It can
permanent
be an overnight
disability. That's it.
Life-changer.
Absolutely. And I mean, my 10-year-old son alerted me to this.
Yeah.
3 weeks before the video circulated, he had heard via his school about the challenge. And that's just phenomenal, because TikTok obviously is a massive platform.
A huge reach, yeah.
But the controls regarding security and that kind of thing and privacy settings, that's why I was so excited about the news report, the highlights that were aired.
Family safety mode that's been introduced. Okay. So I don't know, look, if anybody listening has encountered this, has your child told you that it is happening at their school? Have they been part of it? And you want to share with us what was going on? We're happy to take those voice notes or calls. Phone us on 021-446-0567 or send a voice note to 0725671567, but please consider having the conversation at home and just alerting them to the fact that it might seem like stupid fun, but it could be a potentially a whole lot more serious. So too can some of the sports injuries we're talking about today, Darren. I mean, it is a competitive world. School boy and school girl sport is quite a different kettle of fish in 2020 to what it was in 1990 when some of us were at school, where only the very top athletes played at a very serious level. Nowadays, the seasons are longer, the leagues are bigger, there is a lot at stake for schools in terms
Correct.
Of reputation, etc. Talk to us about why you wanted to raise this topic today.
Yeah, I'm very concerned about so many parents that are raising the issue as well regarding their children having such long seasons, depending on what type of sport they're doing. So whether they're doing athletics, cross country, or playing fives football, or even hockey, they are spending so much time in training pre-season for the real season, and the times for actual rest and recovery in terms of your body and your anatomy, your bone structure, your skeleton, and your musculature has become less and less and less. So the line that you actually walk is so fine in terms of balancing prestige, elite performance at the highest level, and injury. because there's a very narrow therapeutic index where, for example, the load that you're putting your system under to achieve the heights in excellence that you're going for can predispose your tipple just into injury. And what's happening is we're seeing that pressure now. We're seeing more teams. It's not just an A and B team playing in the league. There's an A to F team. They're all playing weekly matches. As someone gets injured, they're just recycling the players into the different teams. Sometimes you're playing two or three games a week. And then, of course, the actual training is happening. But the games have all changed as well. The surfaces have changed.
Mm-hmm.
Think of hockey. We used to play hockey on fields with not regular surfaces. There were some dongas and what have you. And now a lot of the kids are playing on Astro, which is extremely fast, which brings a set of different kinds of conditioning and sports injuries than other sports types and surfaces used to bring many years ago. And the equipment needs to adapt to the changing of the rules, the changing of the surfaces and so forth to prevent injury. And sometimes that change isn't quick enough.
Yeah. I'm smiling.
Why
are you laughing? I'm laughing because...
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking so my son, in his primary school years, was at St. George's in Mowbray, where it's a good old-fashioned, quite bumpy field that he learned to play his hockey on. So he was used to the ball veering off in strange directions and you know, having to mitigate for running on an uneven surface. But the first time they went to play against a team on the Lunga AstroTurf, he came back as white as a ghost. He's like, "Mom, you should have seen how fast the ball was going." Completely unnatural. And I mean, that was primary school sport. It was fine. Nobody got injured. It was all fun and games. And
all
in
new,
fact,
yeah.
you know, the team swapped players halfway through and it was all very sweet. But it's a serious issue. So he was completely under-equipped to deal with that speed and that level of the game and that kind of playing surface, having had no experience on it and certainly no training on it.
Exactly.
You can imagine now if you fast forward that to the high school years where the game is faster, more serious, a bit more aggressive.
Absolutely.
The players coming from a school which doesn't have the Astro facilities must now play a match against somebody on Astro. You can imagine what a big, big challenge that was, and I guess how much riskier it would be.
And the forces involved, the ground reaction force that you have when planting your feet and sprinting, for example, on a hard surface.
Yeah.
Are massive. The distribution of those forces are controlled by so many different factors,
mm-hmm.
from your musculature and your muscle tone to the bone structure you have to your arches of your feet, whether you have flat feet or not. And then, of course, going on to your inner soles, the shock absorption, the actual equipment, the stud pressure from your studs, and how the forces are then transferred through the feet, through the ankles, through the tibia and the shins. The shins are big ones for hard surfaces.
Okay.
We used to speak about shin splints back in the day from training on a hard surface, and you just use horse liniment and you'd use ice and rest a bit, and they'd tell you to train on grass for a while because the track caused it, and hard shoes, and that's all we knew about it. But now we've progressed to see that untreated shin splints leads to things called stress fractures, which could limit and disable you from participating in sport for up to 6 months or a year.
Wow.
So you get basically a small hairline crack that forms eventually, because what happens is you're loading the skeleton with a certain amount of load, and your body can take so much, and then there's a lovely structure, architecture of the bone that then rebuilds it. So it breaks it down and rebuilds it. There's cells that do that all the time in the skeleton. So what happens is if the load is too much, it can't rebuild quickly enough, and then you get a hairline crack that then accentuates as a stress fracture.
Okay.
And that then gives you a disability where you need to recover over many months. Yeah.
So recovery time becomes a crucial thing here, Darren. And,
absolutely.
And again, the pressure to get back on the field, and we understand you've got to help your kids manage the expectation, because
correct.
If they're out of sport, they know they're missing out on training. They're worried that their peak performance is going to tail off, that maybe their place in the team might be at
risk.
That's
the one.
They're going to be challenged by somebody else to take that place.
Yes.
So obviously they want to get back on the field and back in training soon. We're doing them a disservice if we facilitate that rush back, though. Darren,
conditioning is not in place.
Talk to us about how much time you should have off after something like a sprain or shin splints.
Yes, good question. Yeah. So the issue would very much depend on whether you just have an inflammatory process, what they call medial stress syndrome, tibial stress syndrome, which is shin splints, where you have inflammation of the insertions onto the bone itself. And that obviously could take weeks to months in itself just to adjust the load and the training schedule. So you don't have to stop training if you've got shin splints, for example. You adjust the load, you change the training surface, and you mitigate those risks. But if you have a stress fracture already, what happens is you've got non-union of bone, and that needs to be fixed, or you need to reduce the load off that completely. And that's where you use electromagnetic stimulation and a whole lot of other techniques like shockwave therapy to help promote healing again of something that went missing and that couldn't heal itself over time due to the abuse. So we need to manage that. So I think one of the big things are understanding the word conditioning.
Yep.
Conditioning means getting your body ready for the load that you're going to place on it at the right time in the season. So everyone speaks about peaking. When do you peak? When it's athletic season, when it's rugby season, hockey season, etc. So you've got to adjust the load accordingly and work towards your body adapting to that intensity over time, not in a short time. And that conditioning is the thing that coaches need to understand. If you're coaching someone on Astro, you could put them their running shoes on instead of studs while they're doing their sprints and running. They don't have to do all their fitness training on studs, for example.
Okay.
That's a simple practical tip for soccer players, for hockey players, and even for athletes. They don't have to do all their sprinting training on a tartan track. They can do it on grass, for example. And you can mitigate those risks. And any experienced trainer and that works with a decent team or educational system of bios and physios will know these things. But if you don't, ask. I mean, even our local government's got resources in sports medicine and sports science across the country, not just in the Western Cape, for PT teachers and coaches at schools to actually plug in and ask these questions.
That's good to know, because I'm sure the coaches are under a lot of pressure as well. As much as we're saying, this is a multifaceted thing. The kids themselves are putting pressure to want to get back on the field. Sometimes it's the parents who are living their own sports dreams vicariously through their kids. They want their child back in the A team as fast as possible. I'm sure, particularly at the top sporting schools, there's a huge amount of pressure on those coaches to get your A players back on the field as fast as you can.
I mean, even things like honours, never mind national colours. Yeah. I'd like my full school colours or honours for this sport. That means you have to place 80% of the games for the first team or second team. So all those things are making, you know, they make our decision making really tough.
We've got a voice note that's come in about sports injuries and the amount of sport children are doing. I think let's take a listen to that one first, please.
The peak performance is going to Pippa, hi. I'm just listening to your show now. And absolutely fascinating about what you have to say about these kids and the amount of sport they do. It's completely excessive. And I mean, the amount of kids that actually burn out by the time they finish school because of the pressure and the amount of stress that they're under during school in the sports arena. And then, you know, they get injuries, like you say, about hairline fractures. And then they're back on the field and their parents put them back, or the doctors say they can go back, and then they just get more and more injured. By the time they're 25 years old, 35 years old, they can't run, they can't do anything. They're basically, their bodies are finished. Really, really sad.
Thanks. I mean, some important points there. Darren, I mean, we've got to say this. It's exercise and a healthy approach to sport and being active is crucial. And it is something that sports must, that schools must encourage. But there is a balance between making sure that somebody is fit and active and leading a healthy lifestyle and pushing them past the limits of what particularly a growing body can do. I'm mindful of the fact high school years, bodies are changing, their rapid growth spurts as it is that your body is trying to contend with. Is there an extra layer of pressure in those late teenage years?
There is indeed. And I think what's causing this is that because we want levels of excellence, we are specializing the children too soon in eventing. So when you're looking at even athletics, we used to do the 100, 200 and 400 meters. Mm-hmm. Because of the era of technology and understanding all this information of specializing muscle types for short sprints, explosive power, for example, kids are only training for the 100 meters. Kids are only doing hurdles. So the generalist in terms of athletics doing a little bit of long jump and a little bit of this, that's changed. And what's happening is we're specializing them in rugby and in athletics and soccer and hockey too soon. We're even telling them which position they can and can't play from the ages of 12. You must become a link and you must practice all the skills of a link and only work on that, and you can become the best link in your division. So that's early specialization is a problem. It results obviously in putting a lot of pressure on it and also preventing you from doing a diversity of playing therapy and playing sports. So allowing the child to actually play and be active in non-competitive sport is also a problem.
We do them such a disservice, because maybe there was somebody in there who was going to discover an absolute passion for basketball or rowing or sailing or something, and never got to do it because they were spotted as a rugby talent early on, and that's where all the energy is ploughed.
Absolutely, 100%.
If you're going to end up being a Springbok rugby player, of course, you can make the case that it was worth it, but how many of them actually do?
The percentage is very small at that level.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need to ask ourselves. And like you said, we live so many of our dreams through our children. Mm. So often ask about the motives. Do you fill in a menu form for your child as to which activities they must do? Remember when you have to work out the roster as a parent? To synchronize the days and the hours for homework.
How you manage the lifts and
all that. I had to do that last night, and I had to look at, seriously, and my son wanted to do cross country and rugby, for example, back to back, 3 days a week. And I just said, choose one.
Too much.
You can get back to cross country at some stage. What about just having time to play?
Exactly.
So there you go.
So SMS from someone saying, please, will you talk about groin injuries as well? Because of course the muscle sprains and bone breaks are not the only thing to worry about. Yeah,
correct.
That's an important point for raising. Thank you.
Yeah. So groin injuries, obviously the adductor muscles. So they pull your knees towards each other.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously those are often problematic with kicking. So a lot of kicking sports involve that muscle where it inserts and attaches to the pelvic bone, is where you'll have a small tear, either in the proximal part, depending on where the forces are distributed. And repetitive kicking, for example, kicking for poles, practicing soccer, that kind of thing, without the necessary conditioning and strengthening exercises beforehand, and also overtraining, cause micro tears in the adductor muscles, which then lead to scarring tissue and greater tears over time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's once again a weakness then that steals from the skill instead of enhancing it.
So much to think about. Darren, thank you. You've given us a lot to ruminate upon. I mean, if there's a closing message you'd like the parents listening today to keep in mind, what would it be?
It would be just remember that you're dealing with a holistic child, and you have the ability to influence perception. And the perception is that they must enjoy physical activity, because it's an honor to participate in physical activity. And you want to sustain that relationship as long as you possibly can with activity and exercise. So putting pressure and restricting what they do and the boundaries too much can actually make them fall out of love with physical activity, which could have dire consequences on their health going down the line, as we know.
Such an important message. Dr. Darren Green, thanks so much for joining us today.